Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast. Here is your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another episode of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1. You can read me on Bleacher Report. You can also hear me on radio.com and Entercom terrestrial stations. You can follow me on Twitter at Rick Bucher and on Instagram at Rick_Bucher. It is my great pleasure to have our guest for today, one Kent Bazemore from the Portland Trail Blazers, the veteran guard Kent Bazemore. And I have to tell you, Kent, when I walked into the Blazers locker room and I saw you and you said hello, I was like, damn, it was just yesterday. There was this fresh face in the Warriors locker room. And now you're the KG vet. It's what happened, dude? Where'd the time go? What happened?
It has flown by, to say the least, man. Like, it's been a blur of sorts. Going from the Bay Area and down to SoCal for a little bit, spending the last 5 years in Atlanta.
Yep.
And now I'm back on the East West Coast, Pacific Northwest, playing for the Trailblazers. And it seemed like it happened that quick.
So for those who aren't completely familiar with Baze's story, undrafted in 2012, was, I think, with the Thunder and Summer League and then the Warriors. And I got to tell you, man, I look at the career that you've had and what you've been able to do. And as an undrafted cat out of Old Dominion, you're one of those success stories that I think every kid dreams about. I don't know how much feedback you get, but you know, the guys that aren't the first round picks, that aren't the touted McDonald's All-Americans, like, you're the kind of story that gives all those kids hope that, hey, you know what, I could still make it if I do the right things and I land in the right place.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. My agent Austin Walton came to town probably about a month ago, and we were going over just like the draft classes and the second round picks that were still in the NBA from when I came in up until now. And you know, it's not a lot. I think the most class had like 7 or 8 second round guys that are still in the NBA. So I mean, that door is forever evolving, and finding a niche and sticking is hard. You know, I think it's harder to stay in today than it is to get in. You know, with so many picks, 60 draft picks, and summer league and the G League, all the exposure now.
Yeah,
I think staying in is crazy and really seizing that opportunity.
So, how much the fact that you started with the Warriors and they weren't at the point where, you know, they were just beginning their journey to ultimately what they became. But what was it like? How instrumental in looking back was it that you were in a locker room with Steph and Clay and some of the guys that went on to win rings?
I think it was that's like such an underrated thing now in today's game, with so many young teams. You know, average age being, 25, 26, that's just so young. I came into a locker room with Andrew Bogut, Andres Biedrins, Richard Jefferson, Carl Landry, Jared Jack.
Yeah.
I had so many, you know, older guys that have been around for so long. Jermaine O'Neal, second year. Andre Iguodala came over the second year before I left. So I was just around a lot of guys, and I was very impressionable as a young guy. Most young guys are, but you see the way these guys carry themselves, how they took care of their bodies and how they just went about their work. And some of the stories they told, you know, about some of their pitfalls, and just learning from all of that, and you know, without even knowing, it kind of shapes you.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to kind of sit in that role last year in Atlanta with all the young guys, and still keeping an eye on them this year. It's just good to see them kind of coming to their own.
Well, now you were instrumental in your way those early years too. People give you credit for hooking up Steph with Under Armour and also hooking up Old Dominion. I know that they've retired your number a couple years ago.
Yeah.
When are they building the Kent Bazemore statue? Because what you delivered for that program, for the UA dollars that came in, man, what they built, like they built a new gym, right? I mean,
yeah,
you set them up.
Yeah, man, I just, you know, just another way of kind of using your platform, dreaming big, you know.
Yeah.
The whole Under Armour step thing was like a shot in the dark. Like, you know, it was this last year with Nike. I was just a, you know, undrafted guy with 19 boxes of Under Armour products sitting in my hotel apartment. I mean, my first apartment.
Right.
So I'm wearing new stuff every day.
Right.
You know, I'm just ripping up plastic bags. There's plastic bags all over the house. Not doing any laundry. I got laundry up to my ears and just new stuff that I wore only once. And, you know, I'm like, dude, like, you know, you could be the face of this brand. You know, I'm just spilling out all this stuff, having no idea. I hadn't talked to anyone in Under Armour.
Right.
And, you know, you fast forward, you got this seventh shoe out. You know, it's pretty remarkable.
Have you ever, and I know you guys are continue to be close, right? I mean, Have you ever talked to him about his shoes? Like, dude, those were fire, or dude, that's not you. Have you ever discussed ultimately where he's taken the brand?
Yeah. I mean, I think two summers ago he did his elite camp and the Bay Area. I came out for a day and a half, and because I don't really get to see him much in the summer. You know, he's busy, and then, you know, I got my own life too. So it's just good to kind of, you know, spend some time with him, work out with him a little bit. And I was able to see, you know, the set, his new shooter just came out, and it's just cool to kind of hear how much knowledge he now has, you know, in that realm.
Yeah.
You know, because when we first started out, they were kind of bringing stuff to him saying, hey, this is what we're looking for. But, you know, Steph's a brilliant guy, and, you know, anything he, you know, kind of gets his hands on, he really dives in, you know, he's all in. And just to hear him talk about, you know, how certain shoes felt and what he's looking for out of the next shoe is just, it's cool. And it's cool to see the team, you know, everyone there kind of brainstorming together, because, you know, this is a, you know, guy they took a chance on. You know, Steph was having, you know, all those injuries and stuff early in his career with his ankles and stuff. So it was a leap of faith from both sides, and they worked tirelessly together to kind of now it's looking, you know, fast forward, it's kind of an afterthought. You know, obviously he has the wrist thing now, but the guy's playing at a remarkably high level.
So to that end, I mean, you knew him when he was trying to get over those early ankle issues. How do you think he's handling this whole hand wrist thing? Because he's been pretty low profile since it happened, and obviously this hasn't been a good season overall for the Warriors. But I feel like, one, you know, he's been through this with something tough like this before, but this is, in another way, it's a completely different kind of injury. And I would think when you're a shooter or whatever, having anything happen with your wrist or your hands, even if it's your offhand, is like, you got to work through some things, right?
Yeah.
In terms of just getting past a lot mentally as well as physically.
Yeah. But I think the thing I think that I love about Steph is, like, you know, his mentality is know, he never really wavers. You know, he's a even keel guy, and he lives for challenges. You know, even if it's, you know, winning back-to-back NBA championships or dealing with a wrist injury, he's going to find a way to keep himself, you know, sharp. And I spoke to him, and, you know, he's talking about just the fact that he gets to spend so much time with his family now.
Yes.
You know, obviously his wife travels a lot. She does a lot. She's doing her thing, and she's killing it. And, you know, with him being on the road during the NBA season all the time and, you know, Asia tours and Olympics and all this stuff, I said, dude, like, I told him, I said, man, the last 10 years of your life have been crazy. Like,
yeah,
I think you deserve this break, you know, like, just to get away from the game a little bit and really reconnect. And he does a good job of that stuff. I learned a lot from him in that aspect, too, of, like, really balancing, like, family and basketball. And I think this year he's just seized the opportunity to, you know, kind of, you know, build up his off the court stuff. I saw the day that he's starting an AAU team, mm-hmm. Boys and girls. So just working on small projects like that, keeping himself busy and, you know, really diving into, you know, the relationship with his wife and his kids.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I'm not going to say who told me, but someone who knows Steph well, and it just was happenstance. We were talking about this earlier in the year after the injury, and they said, I don't think he's going to play. He's going to play again this year. And it wasn't that he couldn't or he didn't want to, but it was exactly what you said. Like, he's just been consumed with basketball all this time. And he wants to play in the Olympics this summer. And the thought was, like, dude, just give yourself a nice stretch. I mean, it's not like the team's accomplishing anything right now, right? Like, just hit the total reset button. And then
that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, my bad. Yeah, that's the other thing about Steph. Like, it's hard for him to sit down. Like, dude, he is an absolute animal. Like, His energy levels is off the charts, and I haven't talked about him. I haven't talked to him about coming back and playing this year. But if it's up to him, I mean, I don't know. I think he'd probably try to go out there and give it a go, man.
Yeah,
the dude is just the ultimate competitor. I mean, he just doesn't know how to sit down. He really doesn't.
Yeah, no, he came out and he had a press conference where he said he was going to try to play. He was going to try to play in the spring. And I'm looking at him going, okay, spring is like mid-March, third week of March. You're going to play like the last 2-3 weeks of the season. You know, most people scoffed at that. But as you said, knowing Steph, I could see where he would bust his ass to come back and just play like 4 or 5 games just because it gives him that target of – I want to get back. I want to have a reason to get back, and doesn't matter where the team is. You mentioned that you were young and impressionable when you came in into the league, and there was the for those who were following the team at the time, they pulled a rookie prank on you. They filled your car with popcorn, right? To the brim. And I remember talking to you afterward, and you were saying, like, you know, you turn the AC on and every now a kernel comes shooting out out from that time after you cleaned it out. But I also, and I don't know, I got the sense that while you accepted the prank, that there was something that bothered you about it. Like, I felt like you were just, there was something about it that, and I'm reading way too much into this, but
no, I was definitely upset.
Okay.
I was so upset, you know, like, you know, but you know, what do? You got all these vets, you know, all this time and money, and and I probably warranted what happened. You know, I would play one on one with Richard Jefferson after practice. You know, I would get a little chirpy and some of those slick comments here and there. So I was probably warranted what came to me.
Right.
So it was a nice piece of humble pie. And, you know, as you know, no one likes humble pie, you know.
Sure.
So I definitely wanted to get back, you know, but, you know, it wasn't a smart thing to do. So those situations like that, you just kind of got to take on the chin. And like looking back, I'm glad I didn't do anything.
Cause, yeah.
I mean, these guys are really, really, really creative. No telling what would have happened after that.
So, when you sold the car, was there any, like, were there still remnants? Did you have any issues? What was, because I think I remember you saying at the time, it was like, damn, man, this thing still smells like popcorn, or you still got.
Yeah, dude, it smelled like popcorn probably a good 4 to 6 months after. You know, but you do enough detail. Like, I watched that car probably like once a week. You know, I watched it every chance I got. There was like a little stuff wash.
Yeah. What kind of car was it?
Stuff wash, car wash. It was an Audi S5, the coupe, two-door coupe. And it was like a little car wash up Broadway a little bit. And I would go over there once a week and wash the car, you know, clean the insides. And I found this leather conditioner stuff, and I would kind of clean in the inside and spray all my stuff in there, you know, clean the carpets. And, you know, over time, it kind of, you know, got the smell away, but the kernels would still come out every now and again. I didn't eat popcorn for a long time, I'll tell you that.
Oh, my goodness. Now, the other non-basketball claim to fame that you have, obviously, is a striking resemblance to Chance the Rapper. And you know this, right? I mean, this is not news,
yeah,
right?
So
I'm just wondering, what's the best and worst experience that you've had when it comes to being mistaken for Chance?
The best one I had, he came down to Lakewood Amphitheater in Atlanta, Georgia, and he performed, and I had on a three hat, and I went out on stage. They introduced me though, but the way the crowd went so crazy, you know, like I've never experienced, you know, I think it was like 50,000 people there, maybe 60,000. It was like 40,000 people there, maybe.
Yeah.
So I've never like experienced like that kind of, you know, energy like screaming at you. You know, like being in an arena, it gets pretty loud.
Sure.
You know, but it's like 18,000-20,000 people, but 40,000 people screaming at the top of their lungs, like that was a cool moment. And then another cool moment, we went up to Chicago one summer for Pete Meyer's wedding. He was a coach of ours with Golden State.
Yep.
Me, Steph, Harrison Barnes, Andre Iguodala was there. So Chance took us up to Sports Zone. It's like a big trampoline, like the big trampoline facilities where they got the trampolines with the basketball goals.
Uh-huh.
We played dodgeball. So all of us played dodgeball against his people from Chicago. And we stayed up there till like 4 a.m. So that was another cool instance. But I mean, other than that, like it's nothing really bad comes from it. You know, we had saw it, you know, people were tweeting us back and forth, like my rookie year.
Right.
Oh, y'all look alike. And then one day I tweet him back and he was like, dude, I was waiting for you to say something. And, you know, you just look at, you know, his career and what he's done, man. It's just cool to, you know, make those kind of relationships and just watch people grow.
For sure. And I think, you know, one of the things people often take for granted or don't take into account is, like, you come from a small town, relatively small town, right? Weren't heralded coming up. And now your boys with Steph, your boys with Chance the Rapper.
Right.
Like, do you ever kind of stop and look around and go, damn, man, how'd this, if you were going to say, like, this is why this happened. This is what allowed me to live this life, be living this life. What would you point to?
Just a lot of work, hard work, and just believing, man. Like, you know, everything I do today is just what I know. You know, just playing hard, working hard, and, you know, just going as hard as I can and just trying to be, you know, a genuine person. You know, I'm a big energy guy, and you know, the world puts people in your life for certain reasons, and you know, it's just good to capitalize on, like, you know, sharing a locker room with Steph, and, you know, last year Vince Carter, this year Carmelo Anthony, like,
yeah,
you know, these are guys I watched, you know, growing up. You know, even, you know, little encounters I had with Kobe down in L.A., you know, he wasn't around him much, but, like, you know, that's the stuff I get to tell my kids, Jermaine O'Neal, you know, Carl Ant, like, guys that played my sport at a very high level for a very long time. Like, I mean, being back in Kelford, watching these games on, like, a, you know, 20-inch box TV, you know, and to actually, you know, being out there on the floor with them and having conversations with them. And even when Melo was in New York, when I was in Atlanta, playing against him all the time, and, you know, we used to get into it, but now we, like, you know, we talk, we laugh about it a lot, and, you know, he's, like, becoming a really, really good friend of mine. So, like, this stuff like that is why you just never should stop working. Like,
yeah.
I mean, regardless when the day seems the darkest or it doesn't seem like, you know, you're going to make it or whatever, just keep pushing. But, I mean, something's going to come good out of it. You know, if I never play the game again, like, I know I got some really good friends that I can, you know, call on, hang out with, play golf with. Paul Millsap, Cal Korver, Al Horford, you know, Jeff Teague.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You guys shared the court with, you know, 4 all-stars, you know, like, that's, I mean, at one time, like, that's, I mean, stuff, you know, that I said, this is why you work. That's why you do it.
Sure. Before we continue the conversation with Kent Bazemore, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, CycleCast. I found CycleCast on my own, and then they became a sponsor. If you're looking to make your workouts more enjoyable, more challenging, and more conducive to your busy schedule, and you're tired of having to create new playlists, and you're looking for someone to keep you motivated with new routines but on your time, you can do all that with CycleCast. It's an app that provides studio quality classes for both indoor cycling and running workouts. Now, as I said, I found CycleCast on my own. I already had a quality spin bike, and I didn't want to spend a ton of money on a new bike with a video screen and all that. You know the one I'm talking about. I don't need to see a bunch of other people on spin bikes. I just needed an instructor who had an ear for music that would get me working really hard and gave me a ride plan that made me feel like I was going somewhere, both while I was in the saddle and with my overall conditioning. That's exactly what CycleCast gave me. And it did it for a ridiculously low monthly subscription. You can use the app on your iOS or Android phone, which means that you can take it with you wherever you go. Minimal battery and data use, and you can use it on any kind of bike, and they've added a running program, both indoor on a treadmill and outdoor. As someone who travels and has to fit my workouts around my schedule, I love that I can take CycleCast with me wherever I go and use it with any available spin bike. Look, I'm all about simple, effective, and fun, and CycleCast gives me all three with an array of instructors you're going to love. Shout out to Rachel, Shanda, Noel. I love it. I said it was a ridiculously low subscription. We're actually going to do you one better. We can help you reach your goals in 2020 or set new ones. Download the CycleCast app and then use the promotional code BUCHER, B-U-C-H-E-R, and you'll not only get their 7-day free trial, you'll get 4 free additional weeks. That's CycleCast, CycleCast. Don't forget to use the promotional code BUCHER, BUCHER. You'll get 5 free weeks of guided workouts, whether you run or you ride a bike, and you'll get killer soundtracks with it as well. CycleCast, you're going to love where this app takes you. And now, back to the conversation with Kent Bazemore. Is there somebody in particular that among those guys that you've become close with who you think has, like, the public perception from what you know is the most misleading? That what people think of that person is not, like, you got a different perspective because you were able to see them.
Well, I don't. I think Carmelo is. He's just a smart dude. Like he, like, you know, the conversations and stuff that, you know, we have over dinners and, you know, just his level of awareness of like what's going on around him. I don't really think people see that, you know. And I say him because his situation is the freshest on my mind. Like, you know, him missing an entire year after the year before that being an all-star and, you know, for someone that's been so consumed with the game, you know, from an early age to have it taken away with everything he went through in New York and, you know, Oklahoma City and Houston, you know, all that stuff, to being out of the league, to coming back, you know, like like I started following him right before the season started, and like his posts and stuff were like just so intricate and deep, you know, like he reshaped his whole mentality to, you know, becoming a well-rounded person and just being grateful for like what's in front of him and not even the game. And you can see with the passion he plays with now that he's playing from a totally different, you know, space. And that stuff, like as an athlete, you know, going through, you know, the mental, you know, mental health or mental stress of, you know, being a pro athlete, that, you know, you see guys rebound mentally, you know, because it's all in us physically, but if you can rebound mentally, like it just says a lot about your character and who you are. And I think that's something that's just been within him for a very long time that a lot of people never really talked about.
Where was that mental rebound for you? I have a guess, but I wonder where was the spot where you're like, where the low point or the point where like you felt your career or your ability to be in the league, you had the most concern about, hey, how do I keep this rolling?
Well, it happened early on when I was at Golden State and we had a little experiment with me playing some backup point guard. We played the Pistons in Golden State and Will Bynum was picking me up full court. I couldn't get into a play. I couldn't, you know, he was just turning me, you know, every couple of dribbles turning me, and you know, I'm trying to call the plays and he's sitting in my lap, and he was a much smaller guy than me. And I, you know,
but a little bulldog, like a little more physical dude.
Yeah. I was playing a little bit more upright, you know, so, you know, it was tough for me to, you know, handle that kind of stuff. And being a point guard in the NBA, especially on the second unit, is one of the toughest things ever, because that second unit point guard is going to be a dog 9 times out of 10. And he's going to pick you up 94 feet, regardless of who you are. So, and you know, I think I averaged like 4 minutes, 6 minutes a game. And, you know, I knew, you know, I handled myself well in like the D league and summer league and stuff. But, you know, on the higher levels, you know, cause I'm 6'4", 6'5", and, you know, we were pretty much loaded at, you know, the wing, you know, guard wing position. So there wasn't really any minutes there for me. So I wasn't even thinking about getting traded. You know, I was just like, you know, where do I fit in on this team?
Right.
You know, other than coming in late, you know, getting stopped. So it got a little scary then, and not having a guaranteed contract. Like, I didn't know anything about the business side of the NBA with contracts and stuff and guaranteed contracts and what you need to do to get it guaranteed and all of that, you know. Because my agent at the time was fairly new. You know, he had Andrew Gout a lot before me, but, you know, with this kind of deal, you know, we were both kind of new to it. So we just took it a day at a time. And, you know, January 10th was a guaranteed date at the time. And once, you know, like a week before Christmas, like I just started losing sleep, you know, like I just started freaking out with this, like, you know, like what's next? You know, I turned down a deal in the Ukraine, right out of college to pursue, you know, summer league and NBA training camp. So, I mean, you're just trying to look past, you know, what's in front of you, and you don't really see any options. Like, it's kind of scary.
Sure.
So, I mean, that, and then, you know, the first year I signed my big contract in Atlanta, I kind of had, you know, just a mental block of trying to live up to, you know, because a lot of people see what you make and they try to put your stats there.
Like, sure.
You're making this much, you should be averaging this.
Well, but don't guys do that too? Don't, I mean, don't you feel like compelled? Hey, I'm getting paid this, so I'm supposed to be this now, and it takes you out of your game?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, and everyone talks about, you know, growing their game, you know, adding different aspects to the game. I mean, you do that, but it's just it's a little bit of you know, trying to do too much, you know, over trying. And you know, it's just not a good balance, you know, it's just not a good mix of, you know, having that pressure and, you know, and obviously you thinking, you know, you get paid a little bit more, your life should be a little bit easier, but I mean, that's never, I mean, it's not as true as it seems. You know, you got, you know, people think, you know, family stuff when you first get in the league is crazy, but once they, you know, the world sees, you know, those kind of numbers, you know, everyone's after you then, you know, it just gets even crazier. You got, you know, people coming at you to donate, you know, to certain causes.
Right.
You know, and, you know, it's just a lot, you know, it's a lot to handle. And then, you know, you get your family, and you buy a house and you get married and all this stuff starts happening. You're like, I mean, I'm up to my ears and just, you know, everything else.
Right.
You know, like, you know, outside of basketball, and then you're trying to go out, you know, at the end of a long day and lock in, you know, for 2 or 3 hours. Like, it's an adjustment altogether.
No doubt. I would think it takes a lot of mental discipline and resilience to get through that. What's the craziest business offer or donation? Like, someone asking for your money or trying to get involved. What's the craziest one? Steve Young, I'm dating myself, and Steve Young, the former quarterback, said like somebody came at him with like a Mexican, like a cat farm down in Mexico or something like that.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
I don't know. I never really. So I'm like really conservative as far as, you know, branching out and venturing out and doing stuff. So I've never really kind of, you know, gotten those kind of crazy ass, you know, mainly, you know, since I have a foundation, a lot of people try to, you know, take that route, like, hey, you know, donate to, you know, this basketball team or, you know, this young football team or, you know, it's just, you know, a lot of little things like that. And, I mean, nothing, I don't think I've had anything too crazy, man.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, I just live I'm low profile, and, you know, I think people see me in, like, a Whole Foods, and I'm already buying before they realize it was me. So I'm just kind of, you know, low profile in that way.
Got you. By the way, have you – so we talked about the experience with the rookie prank. Have you pranked any rookies, or how have you approached things as a vet after having had that experience?
Oh yeah, I didn't. I had a hand in. I wanted to saran wrap the rookies' cars together last year in Atlanta. Kevin and Trey. I wanted to park their cars as close as possible and saran wrap them. I bought like 2,500 square feet of saran wrap, and I was gonna wrap their cars together, like just wrap them all the way together.
Right.
But I never got a chance to do it. But yeah, as far as like rookie duties and stuff, I mean, I don't really, because my vets were like, you know, they would take me shopping here and there.
Huh.
You know, I would have to make, you know, store runs every now and again, but it wasn't. You know, they didn't come calling me at, you know, 3 a.m. to, you know, do something crazy. So I try to be more of a mentor to the young guys, more so than, you know, make them go crazy. Because it's an adjustment. And I understand, you know, coming in as a young guy, like, you know, you don't want, you know, you got enough going on as it is trying to figure out your life. You don't want somebody freaking, you know, bullying you every day.
Right,
you know,
right.
I kind of stay away from it, yeah.
Yeah. No, I figured that. But I also, you know, now that you mention it, you were a high energy rook. I mean, yeah, I can see where the vets might have been like, you know, maybe the popcorn thing wasn't the best thing, but I, like, now that I think about it, Like you, I can see where you might have ruffled some feathers because you just
I asked for it.
Yeah, there was a positive too, though, because you like you made your first claim to fame because of the energy on the bench and everything that you were doing there,
right.
And that was a plus too. I mean, I guess on some right. levels they have to appreciate that too, that you were that energetic about the team.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I do it like that's always been my thing. Like, I just try to do whatever I can to help the team. Like, you know, whatever. Even if it's waving a towel or it's, you know, just saying we down 3-0 in Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals, and you know, I'm saying I still think we're the better team. I mean, we got smacked with the injury bug there late, but you know, just stuff like that. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't lose sleep over it. Like, I'm just whatever my team needs, you know. I just love to win. I won in college. Like, my first time winning the conference championship was, like, the best feeling I ever had in life, because you get to, you know, celebrate with everyone. You know, the video people, the people that pour your water bottles, the assistant coaches, you know, it's just everybody, the community. Like, everyone wins. So, like, I'm all about it. And, you know, that's just something I, you know, carry with me to this day.
So, We'll wrap on this as a result of that. We're recording this after the Blazers' big win in Toronto, and you got tossed in that game after not getting a call. And I can't remember that many times you getting ejected.
That was my first time.
This was your first time. I was going to say.
First time.
Is this a reflection of Bays just not putting up with it anymore, or is this a reflection of where the game has gone? Like, I got to tell you, Bays, and it's not you, but this is one of my issues with the league now, is guys have become actors in this league. Like, there is so...
Oh, yeah.
It used to be that was a soccer thing. We're not flopping. Now, everybody's exaggerating everything. And it really doesn't make me feel good. Like,
I mean, sickening.
I'm old school on this, but it's fooling the referee has become like a full-time job in the league. Now, not to say that that was what you were doing, because I understand I saw the play. I thought there was contact. I don't know what else was going on with you that might have flipped it, or you with the ref or whatever. But, you know, just in general, I feel like it's gone way too far that way. So I say all that as a preface, because I feel like, you know, it's really difficult to know where the refs are coming from, more so today in today's game than ever before. And I think some of it the players have contributed to by this overt trying to fool the referee on almost every single play.
Yeah. It's they're definitely in a tough position, but you know, I play with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, and you know, as a team, we spend so much energy on talking to the referees all night, you know, because you know Damian Lillard drives the ball harder than anyone.
Yeah,
and he doesn't really shoot a lot of free throws.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just frustrating us as a team that could be an advantage for us. You know, we could, you know, maximize our possessions and, you know, get, you know, a bunch of extra points, you know, if he was getting to the free throw line. And teams would have to guard him differently. They guard him very, very physical. You know, they're pushing him, they're hitting him, they're holding him. So, you know, last night was just a culprit of everything. You know, I spent a lot of energy. You know, I got 12 technicals last year, so – I came into this season and said, you know, I'm not going to be that guy this year. So I spent a lot of energy, you know, trying to calm those guys down. And I was getting, you know, I got clobbered a couple times early in the game and, you know, mixed in with other things. And I just kind of, you know, expressed myself and just got ejected for it. But, you know, and sometimes you got to sacrifice yourself. You know, we were kind of frustrated all night, you know, as a team.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, we weren't getting – you know, our due diligence. So you got to sacrifice yourself and, you know, try to get them to respect you a little bit. And,
yeah.
You know, we end up getting the win. So after the game, I was in the hallway. You know, I met my guys out there in the hallway and, you know, dapping them up was a big win for us.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, ultimately it worked. And I think there are times when, especially a guy like you who, as you said, doesn't get tossed and you make your feelings known, the refs are going to take that under advisement and go, okay, we got to, maybe we got to play this a little more fair yeah. or close, not necessarily doing it intentionally, but maybe right. we got to give them a solid because we weren't on the beam.
Yeah. I learned that from Greg Popovich. He does it really well.
Yes.
He'll get tossed and then the game turns. It's like, oh boy, here we go. Like yeah. even when he gets tossed, he knows something's coming. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It never fails. Yeah.
All right. Baze, as always, thank you so much for taking the time. I was looking forward to this. Did not disappoint. Wish you the best going forward. Sure. Hope the Blazers are able to turn this thing. You guys can get healthy and get rolling. I fully yep. expect that you guys are going to make a run before the season is out. So, but thank you for taking the time. And in the meantime, be safe.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Rick.
You got it. All right. That does it for this episode of Bucher and Friends. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Kent Bazemore. In our next podcast, I will be joined by Will Blackman, NFL vet, Super Bowl champ. We'll discuss all the coaching changes in the NFL, as well as the events of the divisional round of the playoffs in the NFL. Don't forget to please rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want us to do something for you, please send a screenshot of that review to @BucherFriends and you'll be eligible to win some prizes. In the meantime, as always, thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.